Hi, how you doing? No, I'm just reporting this naked man in front of the Miami Herald building next to the highway. He's throwing his clothes on the highway. He was next to a pole, actually. He was taking his clothes off and throwing them into traffic. Black male, curly hair, Rastafarian hair, goatee. Can't miss him. He's naked.
Hello, Northeast 13th Street and North Bayshore Drive on the sidewalk, you know, the causeway in MacArthur. There's that bike lane sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe two bums who are going at it with each other taking up the whole lane. I think they're fighting or something.
Listen, there's a naked man on the MacArthur causeway at the end of the causeway coming towards Biscayne Boulevard. He is beating another man to a pulp, like on top of the man, beating him. The man is bleeding.
Somebody's beating on him.
I'm a bus driver. I passed by and I saw what was happening.
I'm not talking about dispatcher. Okay.
Okay.
He's been beating you, man.
He's beating another man. It's a naked man.
Naked man
beating another man. I'm
beating
him.
Beating another man.
Yeah, on the MacArthur Causeway. Like towards the Miami Herald is at the end of the causeway, but he's gonna kill that man. I promise you.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, ma'am. You're welcome.
Bye bye.
Surveillance footage shows the moments after a Miami police officer fatally shoots a naked man after he refused to stop chewing on the face of another naked man. It all happened on a busy downtown highway ramp Saturday afternoon, and while authorities look for more witnesses, one man describes the scene he came across.
The guy was like tearing him to pieces with his mouth. So I told him, get off, you know, it's like, and the guy just kept eating the other guy away, like ripping his skin.
Larry Vega was able to wave down a police officer.
Police officer came over, told him several times to get off. And the police officer climbed over the divider and got in front of him and said, get off. He told him several times, and the guy just stood his head up like that with a piece of flesh in his mouth and growled.
One of the officers then shot and killed 31-year-old Rudy Eugene. The victim, who hasn't been identified, remains in the hospital. Police have released few other details about the attack. Matt Small, The Associated Press.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
I'm Lauren.
I am Ken.
And this is Paradise After Dark.
Dark.
Paradise After Dark is a bi-weekly podcast covering true crime,
unsolved mysteries,
missing people,
urban legends, and the dark side of the Sunshine State.
But first, if you would like to support our show, please subscribe to our Patreon page at patreon.com/Paradise After Dark Podcast.
On Patreon, you'll have access to bonus episodes, our spinoff show, Vacation Edition, discounts on our merchandise, and much, much more.
If you have a question, a Florida case suggestion, or you'd just like to chat, go ahead and email us at paradiseafterdarkpodcast@gmail.com.
And we got...
What do we got?
We don't really have much...
some housekeeping things to
talk
about.
Do we have housekeeping
about?
News? Yeah.
Well, CrimeCon Austin and CrimeCon UK are still a go so far.
Fingers crossed.
So Austin is June 4th through the 6th, and... UK in London is June 12th and 13th. Go ahead and get your tickets online. Use code PARADISE21 for 10% off.
Like I said, I can't rave enough about CrimeCon. I think it's awesome.
And we have kind of a funky, interesting, wacky Florida story for you tonight.
Yeah, this goes this is one most people will remember. Pretty relevant.
It was actually national news.
Yeah, and it's definitely Florida.
Oh.
I mean, if this is Florida man, this is, you know, if this would be Florida man, this is him.
So, naked man shot by Miami police after eating other man's face. That was the headline in the Miami New Times on May 27, 2012. In downtown Miami, Florida, in the early afternoon of May 26, 2012, Ronald Popo, a 65-year-old homeless man, was catching some shade and resting underneath the elevated Metro Mover near the west end of the MacArthur Causeway. The next thing Ronald knew, he was being pummeled by a naked man who was trying to take his pants off and began to eat his face. It was later determined that the attack began at 1:55 p.m. as seen on the nearby security camera on the Miami Herald building. A passing cyclist came upon the scene and called 911. Police officer Jose Ramirez arrived on the scene and ordered the naked man to stop.
Could you imagine what was going through his mind?
These commands were ignored. The perpetrator instead reportedly growled at Officer Ramirez and then resumed biting the victim. The attack ended at 2:13 p.m. with Officer Ramirez shooting the man once at first, which proved ineffective, and then another four times before the man finally keeled over. Now, as you just said, what an unimaginable thing to come up on. Imagine you're just like riding your bike and all of a sudden you come up on the scene where there's a naked man on top of another man eating his face.
Yeah. Weren't one of those on the call-ins on our trailer there at the beginning?
Yes. Well, so, you heard the 911 call-ins on the trailer.
And that's, he was so confused because he didn't really know what it was. I guess he thought they were fighting.
Yeah, I guess.
I couldn't imagine. And then, of course, being the officer to show up and you're like, hey, what's going on here? Because now you've got a naked man and presumably another man whose pants are off.
Yeah. Coming off. Right.
So, I mean, do you think it's like a lover's quarrel? Do you think it's just a fight?
I don't know what I would think. Hell? I would think I would be noping right out of there.
Yeah. Yeah. Instead, I'd be officer. Nope. Well, as mentioned earlier, the security camera at the Miami Herald building caught some of the attack on video. And you can see what appears to be a black man, totally naked, attempting to strip the pants off of Popo as he attacked him. Now, you see the officer drive up, get out of the car, and casually walk up to where the two men were fighting. And this is obscured from the camera view by the train track. Now, suddenly the officer does a double take, pulls his gun, and aims it. The video is widely available online, but we'll post a link to it in the show notes.
So who was the Miami Cannibal, also known as the Miami Zombie or the Causeway Cannibal? Well, his name was Rudy Eugene. He was 31 years old at the time of the attack and worked at a car wash in Miami. He was born in Miami and was of Haitian descent through his immigrant parents, who divorced months after his birth. He never met his father. In his younger years, he attended the Bethel Evangelical Baptist Church regularly with his family. Eugene attended North Miami Beach High School in the late 1990s and played football for his high school team. He was just a normal type of kid that we've had over the years, Jeff Bertani, Eugene's old football coach, told CBS Miami. He was quiet and well-mannered. We never really had any problems with him. I'm surprised about what happened, like everyone else. I never noticed anything that would indicate there would have been a problem. I don't think anyone could have predicted. And he graduated in the year 2000. He lived off and on with his mother and friends and did an assortment of odd jobs, from selling CDs to working at McDonald's and telemarketing. He was married in 2005, which ended in divorce, with his wife reporting that there had been domestic violence in the relationship. He had no children with his wife and no contact with his ex-wife since their divorce.
Rudy Eugene's girlfriend said the attacker on the causeway was nothing like the man she knew and loved. Rudy Eugene was not no zombie or Miami zombie, like they're saying. He was a human being, and that wasn't him, said the woman, who requested CBS 4 News not use her name or show her face. She described him as a sweet, loving gentleman and a hardworking man who worked at a car wash and dreamed of owning his own business. She said she has no idea what caused the vicious attack, but she saw no signs of any violence in the nearly 5 years they lived together.
According to Miami-Dade court records, Eugene did have a troubled past and had been arrested for multiple misdemeanors, mostly marijuana-related charges. But on February 25th, 2004, Eugene broke a table, smashed items around the house, and pushed his mother out of the kitchen. Afterwards, his mother told officers that he had said, "I'll put a gun to your head and kill you." This crime led to his serving probation for resisting an officer without violence. But none of his past incidents involved any level of violence that occurred on the causeway on that day in 2012. Miami Police Union officials representing the officer said the scene on the MacArthur Causeway was one of the goriest they had ever seen. He had his face eaten down to his goatee. The forehead was just bone, no nose, no mouth, said Sergeant Armando Aguilar, president of the Miami Fraternal Order of Police.
Oh, wow. This kind of goes back to what we just said. You saw the man's face eaten down to his goatee.
Ugh.
Like, in
That's like something out of a horror movie.
Yeah, I mean, just.
But it's real.
Yeah. Chunks just missing out of the face. So this guy was literally going after it. I mean, taking bites. I mean, so it isn't like, you know, you just bite somebody. He's like ripping and tearing. Well, on the day of the attack, Rudy Eugene was attending Urban Beach Week. That's the hip-hop festival that's been held in Miami's South Beach over Memorial Weekend since the 2000s. And CBS 4 News investigative reporter Jim DeFade was able to piece together the final 12 hours of Eugene's life. Now, most of this information is from an article from CBS 4 Miami titled "Exclusive New Details, The Causeway Cannibal, Rudy Eugene's Last Hours." And according to two police sources familiar with the investigation, at 2 a.m. on the day he would die, Eugene was at his girlfriend's house in Miami Gardens. She told the police he seemed strange, was going through his clothes and her clothes in a mania. And suddenly he announced he was going to leave and drove to a friend's house in Northwest Miami-Dade. His girlfriend recalled the last time she saw him on the morning of the attack, when he was holding his Bible and kissed her goodbye, saying, "I love you." She said she thought it was odd he was leaving so early, but didn't press the issue. Now, I find this to be a little odd because earlier she said that the guy you saw there was not the person that he is.
But yet, now she's saying that that day
he was being a little odd.
He was going through his clothes and her clothes in a mania.
Yeah. So this is not the person who was there, but yet she does know that on that day that something was off.
Something was off.
Yeah. So that's what I was getting at, is she knew something was off, but yet she, so obviously this is not something that he's ever done before as long as she's known him. We do know he's got the violent past, but anyway, I just thought I was kind of. Yeah.
So by 6 a.m., police said Eugene was at a friend's house and wanted his friend to come with him to the Miami Beach and check out the scene at Urban Beach Weekend, where 200,000 people had gathered to party for Memorial Day. When his friend said that he had to work, police said Eugene went on his own. Now, police knew he parked his car illegally in the area of 10th Street and Alton Road and then was unable to get it started so he could move it. After spending 30 to 40 minutes on the site, as filmed on security video in and around the car, he abandoned it about noon and began to cross the 3-mile-long span of the MacArthur Causeway, stripping himself of his clothing and disposing of his driver's license as he advanced westward, according to an eyewitness. Now, it was a hot day with temperatures in the 90s, and that's a long walk.
Yeah, it is.
3 miles.
Yeah.
So cops found his driver's license and clothes strewn from the beach to the mainland. He eventually became completely naked, discarding even his shoes and his Bible at the crime scene. When he reached the west end of the causeway, it was at that point that police believe Eugene set in motion the events that led to his death at the hands of police and Ronald Popo's gruesome mutilation.
Well, real quick, and I guess this is going to come into play, they did find his Bible and stuff at the scene of where all this transpired.
Yes.
So it wasn't like he stripped his clothes when he left the car and was walking randomly naked. he kind of got naked. It's like everything happened at one time. So he got naked and at that particular time, right?
No, he was getting naked as he was crossing the causeway. So that's, over a 3 mile stretch.
That's right. Yes. Cause they said his clothes were found in different places.
Right.
But his Bible and whatever was found right there at the scene.
So before we move on to the why here, let's move our focus to the victim here, who is Ronald Popo.
I kept calling him Popo, but then I'm like, no, that's the cops, dummy. Well, Ronald Edward Popo, he was born on May 17th.
Popo.
You
said Popo.
I knew I was going to do that. Well, sorry, Ronald Edward Popo was born May 17th, 1947, and raised in Brooklyn, New York. So, I mean, it's not like this guy's, from Brooklyn, pretty tough guy, I got to imagine. He attended Manhattan's prestigious Stuyvesant High School, where he was a member of the Latin Club and worked in the guidance office. Popo enrolled at nearby City College, but he dropped out in late 1966. And he apparently became homeless in 1976 and kind of lost touch with his family, including his own daughter. At the time of his attack, his family hadn't heard from him in over 30 years, and they all assumed that he had killed himself. Well, I tried to reach him, but I just thought he killed himself, his sister Antoinette told CBS4 in Miami, and we really thought he was no longer on this earth. And why would they assume that?
I don't know. That's one of the questions I had, is why would they automatically assume that he would kill himself?
He must have had a big falling out with his family.
We don't really have much information about any of that.
Yeah, not that it matters or pertains to anything in this case. It would just, when you get into these cases, you start talking about those things or looking into things, you start asking questions. And sometimes the questions you ask aren't pertaining to the case. And that's kind of where I'm at right now. Cause why would they just assume he died unless he was just that big of an asshole?
Or maybe he had some mental issues or substance abuse issues.
I think that was the case. He did have
a substance abuse issue. He was homeless for like 30 some years.
Well, we do know that Ronald's life quickly spiraled down into a hazy mess of alcohol and numerous arrests after he relocated from the big city of New York there to Florida. His past shows time in New York City and back in the 80s in New Orleans, but a long record of arrests for mostly petty crimes places him in the Miami area, at least off and on as far back as 1978 when he was charged with criminal mischief. Court records also show that Popo was treated for a gunshot wound at Jackson Memorial Hospital in 1976. And it was January of 1976, so it must have been a little chilly out. It must have been like 75 degrees. At least that's what it feels like here.
In Miami.
Yeah. Now, he listed his address at the time as the Salvation Army's facility on Flagler Street. And in 1983, he was charged with sleeping in public. So obviously, being that he listed his address, Salvation Army, when he went to the hospital for the gunshot wound, and now he's getting charged with sleeping in public. And in 1989, he was arrested or charged for violating park hours, or reprimanded, however. So obviously, he's homeless and continues to be homeless in Florida. Disorderly conduct, assault, petty larceny, and burglary all brought him into court and then sent him back onto the street.
Miami-Dade court records show the last time he appeared before a local judge was in 2006 for trespassing. Now, the Miami Herald reported Popo would just stay outside a public restroom on the north side of Jungle Island. I remember a very intelligent boy, Antoinette told CBS4's Gio Benitez. He went to a private school, and I really just don't understand what happened.
Yeah, that would be kind of confusing. I mean, he went to this sort of prestigious school.
I feel like there must have been some sort of mental illness or substance abuse with the victim, Ronald Popo, because how do you go from having such a good life to just dropping off the grid and being homeless for 30 years? So Ronald had a daughter, Janice Popo DiBello, who had always wanted to meet him. And she had left Janice and her mother when Janice was just 2 years old. So Janice even hired a private investigator to track down his estranged father about 15 years before the attack, but they found nothing. A high school classmate of Popo's told the Miami Herald that he too tried to find him in 2003, but the search dead-ended. At one point in her life, she was living in Pembroke Pines, Florida, just across the county line in Broward County, but has since moved to New Jersey. She was stunned by the news that her father was the victim of the bizarre attack in Miami.
I can imagine.
I'm really upset because I haven't met my father, DiBello told Miami Herald in 2012, not long after the attack. Since I was 2 years old, him and my mom got divorced and there was no, like normal divorces are, where you see your father. Nobody ever heard anything from him, so I never met him. I didn't know if he was alive or dead. I have nothing to say, ex-wife Teresa Chesler told the Daily News. We were divorced probably in 1970, and nobody heard from him since.
Seems like his immediate, his friends and obviously his daughter really care, but this seems like everybody else just kind of, you might be right on that mental health problem or something like that. Maybe he just kind of went on his own and people just.
I'm purely just speculating because I am no doctor.
Yeah.
And I don't know this man. Not a lot about his history.
And I guess I kind of feel bad at this point because I'm kind of feel like, you know, he's the victim here and I'm asking these questions, but you know, when he's, you know, you kind of want to know somebody because everything in his life led him to that day to be on the street that day. I mean, had he been a regular person, I guess that's a wrong way to say it. Meaning, if he didn't have some sort of mental illness or a drug addiction or something, he wouldn't have been living on the street, maybe. I don't know. He may have been at work that day. I don't know.
Well, at least one person had a more recent encounter with Ronald before the attack and was able to take his photo. Nicholas Carlisi, a 21-year-old aspiring photographer, met Ronald on the street in April of 2012 and asked to take his picture. All he said was, "Yeah, you can take my picture," Carlisi said. He smiled and said, "All right, man, no problem." Then he left. He seemed like the happiest homeless person I've ever met, Carlisi explained. He honestly didn't even seem like a homeless person by the way he talked. I hope they don't think he's a crackhead bum that everyone portrays him to be. I hope they see him as a normal person that was happy, that didn't have as much as anyone else, but still could walk around with a smile on his face.
Yeah, you know what? I like that.
So apparently maybe he was homeless by choice.
You know, some people do that.
Yeah, I know.
There was one person when I was a kid, there was a guy, he actually had a trust fund and he actually paid for an apartment for his ex-wife. It was an apartment for his ex-wife and his daughter. But they were obviously divorced, but he was living on the street and he actually was a friend of my father's, and my father a couple of times picked him up, actually drove him to the airport. But the guy was homeless, but like you just said, and it just occurred to me when you said that he did it by choice. I can't think of the guy's name now, but I know that he had the money. He just didn't feel like using the money. He just wanted to be homeless. He didn't want to pay for anything, but he was taking care of his family, if you will. So,
yeah.
Anyway, maybe he was. Who knows? After the attack, Ronald was taken to Jackson Memorial Hospital in critical condition, with 75% to 80% of his face above the beard missing and his left eye gouged out. 2 weeks after the attack, doctors from the Jackson Memorial Hospital told reporters that Ronald was awake and alert, and they even showed a photograph of him walking down a hospital hallway supported by hospital staff on either side of him.
We actually have that photo. We'll put it on our social medias.
Social medias. Isn't it funny how you got to pluralize that word?
Social medias.
Medias. The photo that Lauren's going to post shows the upper two-thirds of Ronald's face covered in thick, bloody scabs. That's going to be a good one to look at. You know, it is kind of gruesome. If you start looking at some of the progression, you know, because there's a couple different photos, but it's just like horrific. Mm-hmm. To look at. So careful, viewer discretion is advised. Now, he was missing his nose. Both eye sockets were covered, one with gauze and one with what appears to be a skin graft. I'm sure they did a ton of that. Doctor said he had a minor brain injury and two wounds that possibly came from the officer's gun who shot Eugene to stop his attack. The object went in and out and broke two ribs. He underwent facial reconstructive surgery that took months to complete, but he remained permanently disfigured and blind. Yeah. So again, Yeah. I'm just thinking about the picture because I looked it up too and was looking at it and I got like.
Well, it's just a horrifying attack.
Yeah.
It's not funny in any, by any means. It's like a horrifying attack. So let's look into the why. Why did Rudy Eugene attack Ronald Poppo? Why did he try to eat his face? Why did he not stop when commanded by the officer?
He didn't even stop when he was shot a couple times.
Why did he actually growl at the officer? And like Ken just said, why did he not stop after being shot? And why did it take 5 bullets to stop his savage attack? I have so many questions here. So from our research, this is what we found. The media immediately started reporting that Rudy Eugene was obviously under the influence of some type of drug. They mentioned bath salts or possibly flaca. Now, according to the National Institute of Drug Abuse, bath salts is the name given to a synthetic cathinones, a class of drug that have one or more laboratory-made chemicals similar to cathinone. Cathinone is a stimulant found naturally in the khat plant grown in East Africa and Southern Arabia. Chemically, cathinones are similar to amphetamines such as methamphetamine and MDMA, which is ecstasy or Molly. Now, these lab-created cathinones can be much stronger than the plant product and can cause harmful effect. Bath salts are usually swallowed, snorted through the nose, inhaled, or injected with a needle. Snorting or injection is the most harmful. The lab-made cathinones in bath salts can temporarily produce feelings of joy and increase social interaction, including an increased sex drive, but they can also cause paranoia, nervousness, and hallucinations. People who take bath salts can experience a myriad of effects, but the most dangerous are hallucinations and violent behavior. Some people experience a syndrome known as excited delirium after taking bath salts. They become psychotic, losing touch with reality, and violent.
Whoa.
Now, before we move on, actually, I did a little bit of extra research on excited delirium because I've heard it before in different cases. So on this website I found called ScienceDirect.com, basically it says that excited delirium is aggressive behavior, altered sensorium, and a host of other signs that may include hypothermia, superhuman strength, diaphoresis, which actually means excessive sweating, and a lack of willingness to yield to overwhelming force. So a lack of willingness to yield to overwhelming force and superhuman strength.
Sounds.
That would kind of fit in with him not stopping even after being shot.
Yeah, it sounds like what occurred.
And it says a certain percentage of these individuals will go on to expire from sudden cardiac arrest and death despite optimal therapy. Traditionally, the forensics community would often classify these as excited delirium deaths. So that's just a little tidbit that I found kind of explaining that a little bit more. Because I wanted to know a little bit more about what that was.
Excited delirium.
Because I've heard it before. So go ahead, Ken.
Well, like what I mentioned earlier, it could have possibly been flaca. Now, flaca is a dangerous drug. It's actually one of the nastiest ones out
there. They're both dangerous.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying flaca is kind of a nasty drug in the sense if it's dangerous. Well, most drugs are dangerous improperly used, but this one's kind of nasty. It's similar to the street drug, like Lauren said. It's similar to the bath salts. Now, flaca is also known as gravel. It also causes paranoia and hallucinations that may lead to violent aggression and self-injury, where, you know, people just – you've seen the people like on the videos, the little quick videos where they're like, almost seem like their bodies are distorted and they just can't, they twitch and twerk and, you know, they it's why I call it a nasty drug. Cause you see people and they just kind of twitch and move in ways that the body shouldn't be moving.
Right. Yep.
According to an article in CNN Health, the man-made drug causes a high. It's similar to cocaine, but like bath salts, Flocka has the potential to be much more dangerous than cocaine. It's so difficult to control the exact dose of Flocka, said Jim Hall, a drug abuse epidemiologist at the Nova Southeastern University in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Now, just a little bit of difference in how much is consumed can be the difference between getting high and dying. It's that critical, he said. A small overdose of the drug, which can be smoked, injected, snorted, can lead to a range of extreme symptoms. Excited delirium, as Lauren talked about earlier, and marked by violent behavior, spikes in body temperature, 105 degrees and higher, Hall said. Paranoia. Probably what has brought Flocka the most attention is that it gives the user what feels like strength and fury, kind of like the Incredible Hulk, where you just like, angry? You don't want to see me when I'm angry.
So this is what the media immediately started saying, that Rudy Eugene must have been high on bath salts or Flocka.
Well, I remember as
something.
When I remember seeing it in the news, it was the zombie. It was all bath salts. That's all they talked about.
Yeah.
And I think anybody listening to this, you're right. I think the news media portrayed it as bath salts, and that's what people kept saying because it was late night television talked about it. Radio stations talked about it. So it was all bath salts, bath salts. And then everybody wanted to talk about what this is. And was, you know, like, oh my God, they're going to take these off the shelf at the pharmacy. They thought it was literally like
bath salts.
Bath salts.
Like, yeah. Epsom salt.
Yeah, they thought it was just people buying Epsom salt. I'm like, I don't think that'd be kind of odd.
But here's the thing. Neither of these drugs were found in Rudy Eugene's system during autopsy.
Yeah, that's what they said.
The Miami-Dade Medical Examiner issued a statement saying that its toxicology lab and outside laboratory were unable to find any cocaine, amphetamines, heroin, LSD, oxycodone, bath salts, or synthetic marijuana in Eugene's system. In a written statement, Medical Examiner Dr. Bruce Heima said, within the limits of current technology, marijuana is the only drug identified in Mr. Rudy Eugene's body.
That's right. Just weed.
H. Chip Walls, a forensic toxicologist, said makers of over-the-counter drugs like synthetic marijuana and so-called bath salts change the ingredients often to stay ahead of the law and maybe staying ahead of the ability of labs to detect their merchandise. As jurisdictions outlaw products, makers alter the contents. So these drugs are being substituted on a daily basis. When one becomes controlled, they put another in that's not controlled, Walls told CBS4's Gary Nelson. Many times, the laboratories don't have the drug standards or correct identification. So it is possible that
there was something
there
in
was
it.
Something in a system that was not able to be detected by the forensic laboratories.
Yeah. Well, you would think that a lab, I mean, I guess I understand because he's obviously works with that. But I'm saying you would think they would have found something that would have indicated some other type of chemical.
Well, it has been said in a number of different articles and things that there was a number of undigested, unidentified pills in Eugene's stomach at the time of the autopsy. But they were undigested, so they were not in his system. And they're still, to this day, unidentified, so we don't know what they were.
Well, speaking of stomach contents, one more interesting fact is there was no human flesh found in Eugene's stomach. So contrary to popular belief, he wasn't actually a cannibal. He didn't technically eat any of Papo's face. He wasn't swallowing the flesh. He was just ripping it and spitting it.
Right. So South Miami forensic psychologist Dr. Wade Silverman has a straightforward opinion of what caused Eugene's bizarre behavior. In common terms, obviously, the man was out of his mind, Silverman told CBS 4 News. He suggested that Eugene was possibly schizophrenic. Silverman said there may be a clue to Eugene's psychotic break in the fact that he left his home with his Bible on the day of the cannibalistic attack. Some pages of the Bible were torn out and strewn along the causeway along with Eugene's clothes. There's often a religious element to schizophrenic behavior, Silverman said. There are all sorts of irrational justifications that the psychotic mind uses to justify their behavior, including the possibility that Eugene believed that God was telling him to do what he did. Now, Silverman cited the case of David Berkowitz, the so-called Son of Sam killer in New York, who believed a dog had ordered him to commit a series of murders. Schizophrenics often believe they hear voices speaking to them, including animals, Satan, even aliens from outer space.
Or dogs.
Or dogs.
Like Son of Sam.
I said animals.
I know. Yeah, or dogs. You know, whatever. Well, Papo was left blind by the attack. Obviously, one of his eyes was gouged out for sure. And after several surgeries at Jackson Memorial Hospital, he was transferred to the Purdue Medical Center. This is Jackson's long-term care facility located in South Miami-Dade. And 2 months after the attack, Ronald Papo gave his first interview with Miami Homicide Detective Sergeant Altar Williams and Detective Frankie Sanchez. For a very short amount of time, I thought he was a good guy, Papo said, but he just went and turned berserk. He apparently didn't have a good day at the beach, and he was coming back, and I guess he took it out on me or something. I don't know. Kind of shows you how humbled he is.
Right.
Papo was a very humble guy, so maybe right. you might be right with that. Just wanted to be alone.
So Sergeant Williams asked Papo what Eugene was saying when he attacked him. And I guess he was saying, you, me, buddy, and nobody else here, Papo recalled. I'm gonna kill you or something like that. Did he say why? Williams inquired. No, he just started to scream, Papo explained, and was talking kind of funny talk for a while, too. What do you mean funny talk? Williams asked. That I was going to die and he was going to die, Papo said. He must have been souped up on something. During another part of the interview, Papo said Eugene expressed frustration at not being able to, quote-unquote, score on Miami Beach. He didn't like the beach, Papo said. He said he wasn't scoring there. He went to the beach to score or something. Now, in a subsequent interview, Papo told detectives that Rudy Eugene blamed Papo for stealing his Bible.
And Papo, he did deny doing anything to provoke Eugene. I mean, what can provoke an attack of that type? Papo asked matter-of-factly. I certainly didn't curse at the guy or say anything mean to him. So at this point, it looks like we will never know exactly what prompted this seemingly normal guy to turn into a zombie, cannibal, and attack a stranger. I mean, what do you think? It wasn't the zombie apocalypse we were all waiting for.
No. I don't know. The only things that I can think of is some sort of drug or some sort of psychosis, like a psychotic break. He was 31 years old, I believe. Yeah. I actually did a whole research project on schizophrenia in college, and I do believe that schizophrenia really, really starts to rear its head in the mid to late 20s. Now, Rudy Eugene was 31. I think that's a very strong possibility.
Well, they do say that in schizophrenia, sometimes there are triggers. So it can hide and kind of be dormant, but then there will be a trigger of some
right.
sort. Because something in your body will trigger. So an event will trigger a chemical to be released that will sort of like basically kickstart it.
Right.
And that's why I'm curious if there was, I don't think not mescaline, but like a release of adrenaline or some other chemical in the body that would be found naturally that maybe a lab couldn't pick up that would have just been released. You know, I mean, like he would just like, you know, like too much adrenaline. Although adrenaline kind of lasts, it's only like a, you know, that's like minuscule amount of time. And this obviously took, this transpired a little longer than that.
Yeah.
So I just thought, huh?
Did you like research that?
No,
or
you're
just guessing.
I'm thinking out loud. Oh, I mean, okay. Because we're talking about trying to, you know, what would cause him to react the way he did? Well, is it something that, you know, he just all of a sudden freaked out and went nuts? I mean, but I'm trying to think of like some kind of chemical. I mean, was like they said, there may have been some drug that was not identifiable.
There were undigested pills in his stomach. We don't know what they were.
But you would assume that if they were digested to some extent, that they would have been the reason for the cause, in which case they would have been able to determine exactly what happened.
But there was nothing found in his system.
Exactly, which means the undigested
pills. So this really is just kind of like a crazy mystery.
Yeah,
like of why this happened.
Yeah, why exactly? So that's what I'm saying. I wonder if there's something that occurs naturally in the body. I don't think I've looked. I researched. I tried to find all kinds of stuff. I mean. Now, some people do have an adverse effect to like certain medicines. Like I know when I had my teeth pulled, I took Vicodin and all I wanted to do was scrub the floor, whereas most people want to go to sleep. But, you know, is it possible? Well, I guess if he had some like laced marijuana, because they said they found weed in his system, but I guess if he had some laced marijuana, that chemical would have showed up in the lab. So I'm kind of, I don't know. I really have no idea. I mean, can you get high and dehydrate and have this problem? You know, it said that he spent 30 to 40 minutes at his car that was broke down and wouldn't start. I mean, was he just that angry and pissed off? I mean, I know I get mad at stuff like that, but my burst lasts, you know, seconds. I don't know. So I have no idea why exactly he would have turned into a zombie.
I never know. And I couldn't find, I don't know if he was buried or cremated. If he was buried, I guess it's possible someday that they could exhume the body and maybe do more tests. But if he's cremated, then I think that we'll just like never know at this point.
Well, you know, I remember when all of this transpired in the news, there was so many news outlets. And I know there was like stuff going around about, oh, here it is, the zombie apocalypse, start preparing now. You see this.
Well, that was back to when The Walking Dead had just started and everybody was all like, oh, zombies.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, and that's the thing. People were like, okay, here we are. This is it. This guy's a zombie. And I think that's kind of, you know, because of the way everything transpired, I think that is why they started to go with the zombie attack. And he was actually called the Miami Zombie or Bath Salt Zombie. And I'll be honest,
there were several different names for him.
When you told me the case we're going to do, I started doing research. I literally started with Miami Zombie. And that's just how I remember it, because he was the zombie, Bath Salt Zombie. That's what I put in, Bath Salt Zombie.
Well, now Ronald Popo is living in a long-term medical facility and has refused any more surgeries or treatments for his injuries. Obviously, he has been through enough. He doesn't like to leave his hospital room and doesn't allow any visitors other than his doctors and nurses. Popo is said to spend his time playing guitar, and he likes to listen to the Miami Heat games on the radio.
Yep. So he's obviously still in Jackson Hospital?
No, he's in a long-term care facility, but he's blind and he's learned to play guitar.
That's impressive.
And there actually is a video, which I will put on our social medias, of him playing guitar. It's a recent video.
Wow.
And he is completely blind, unfortunately, but he did survive.
But this is that's one of those things where maybe the guy didn't lose his life, but he lost his life. You know, so I mean, sometimes, you know, it's not a murder. You know, I know our last case, it was about a serial killer, but this guy kind of did lose his life. The life that he had.
In a way.
Yeah. And so now he had to change lives again. So I don't know if that's good or bad.
Well, that's the story of the Miami cannibal zombie.
Cannibal zombie?
Zombie cannibal.
Yeah, whatever. So I guess that's going to be it for tonight. That's our show. That's the Miami zombie cannibal, bath salt zombie, whatever you called it. I'm sure most of you people probably know this case or remember it, hearing about it at some point.
Again, if you'd like to support the show, please subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/Paradise After Dark Podcast.
You can check out our Etsy store for some awesome Paradise After Dark gear.
Please make sure to follow us on social media at Paradise After Dark Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, and at ParadiseDark239 on Twitter.
You can email us at ParadiseAfterDarkPodcast@gmail.com.
And please make sure to subscribe to the show on whatever platform you're listening and rate and review. This really helps us branch out and reach a wider audience.
And thank you, everyone, for listening
to Paradise After Dark.
Dark, dark, dark.